The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
America was built by people with a few dollars and a dream. But even today, there's still one path to success that only requires a dream and about $10. Because if your dream is to start or grow your business, something as simple as the right business card could make all the difference. Right now at Vistaprint, you can get 500 customized high-quality business cards for only $9.99. That's $9.99, and your satisfaction is absolutely guaranteed. Just go to Vistaprint.com, use promo code 5000 at checkout. That's Vistaprint.com, promo code 5000.
This is the CBS News Weekend Roundup. President Trump promises more legal action to try to get his travel ban reinstated.
But it's a decision that will win, in my opinion, very easily.
This could end up in the Supreme Court, but probably not before Mr. Trump's nominee to be a justice, Neil Gorsuch, gets there. If he gets there, that's up to the Senate. Mr. Trump's cabinet is closer to being finished. I'm Sam Litzinger at CBS News in Washington. There's not much doubt the courts are going to be busy for quite a while with President Trump's executive order on immigration. CBS News correspondent Stephen Portnoy says Mr. Trump's lashing out at the Federal Appeals Court decision against reinstating his refugee and immigration order, calling it a disgraceful decision.
The president's initial reaction came on Twitter in all capital letters. "See you in court," he said. "The security of our nation is at stake." Mr. Trump then told reporters he's confident he'll prevail on appeal.
It's a decision that will win, in my opinion, very easily.
The Ninth Circuit panel said the administration's view that the president's power to impose the travel ban is beyond the reach of the courts, quote, runs contrary to the fundamental structure of our constitutional democracy.
And on Twitter, Mr. Trump pointed to a federal law that details when immigration restrictions by the president are permissible. So, what next? CBS News correspondent Jan Crawford on some of his options.
He could first try to get the Supreme Court to intervene, but that's unlikely at this preliminary phase. So he now will probably end up fighting this case on the merits back in that Seattle courtroom, but also in other courts across the country. Remember, there are a dozen other lawsuits that have been filed challenging this ban, and he does have some good legal arguments that he can develop in those lower courts. Or, you know, he could just start over, craft a new executive order that would give more notice to Congress and the federal agencies that would be affected by it.
So this may well end up in the Supreme Court, where Mr. Trump wants Neil Gorsuch to work. Senators say he told them he found the president's criticism of the judiciary to be demoralizing and disheartening. White House Press Secretary Sean Spicer spun that this way.
The judge was very clear that he was not commenting on any specific matter, right? And then he was asked about his general philosophy. So you can't then take that, equate it back to the specific. He literally went out of his way to say, "I'm not commenting on a specific instance." So to take what he said about a generalization and apply it to a specific is exactly what he was intending not to do.
If you're into conspiracy theories, a senior advisor at the Democratic National Committee says all of this was orchestrated by the White House in an effort to make Gorsuch seem like he won't be a rubber stamp for the Trump administration. This is sure to come up during confirmation hearings, so we'll learn more. Anyway, back to the travel ban. Even though it's on hold, it certainly affected a lot of lives. WTOP reporter Neil Augenstein says two brothers from Yemen who'd been turned away at Dulles International Airport have now been allowed into the States.
The Aziz brothers of Yemen arrived here at Dulles and were reunited with their father.
Thank you for every single person tried to help me bring my kids back. I'm so happy. I'm so glad.
This morning, a wrong has been made right. An injustice has been rectified.
Attorney Simon Sandoval Moschenberg with the Legal Aid Justice Center, which helped in the lawsuit that brought the Aziz brothers and the Al-Marisi families here.
We're standing here this morning with nine people who did absolutely nothing wrong, who had absolutely no reason to be barred from this country other than the fact that their passport said Yemen on it.
Neil Augenstein for CBS News, Dulles International Airport.
An immigrant mother who was granted leniency under the Obama administration has been deported to Mexico in what advocates say is a sign of how President Trump will carry through on his campaign promises on immigration. The lawyer for Guadalupe Garcia de Reyes and an immigrant advocacy group say they learned from Mexican diplomats in the U.S. she'd been taken back to Mexico. The Phoenix mother was in the country illegally and had checked in for what she thought was a routine meeting with immigration officials. They then moved to deport her, prompting protest. He hasn't been in the job very long, but Mr. Trump is already being reviewed. A recent CBS News poll finds that Americans split on his temporary ban on citizens from seven predominantly Muslim countries. 45% approve, 51% disapprove, 40% approve of the overall job he's doing. CBS News correspondent Dean Reynolds talked to some voters in Kenosha, Wisconsin.
We've been visiting Frank's Diner in Kenosha regularly, not just for pancakes the size of catcher's mitts, but for presidential politics, too.
What grade would you give the president so far?
I'd have to break it in two, an A for intentions and a D for implementation.
Every Trump supporter here said the rollout had been rocky, but like local businessman Glenn Woods, they blamed the president's opponents for making things worse.
At the moment, the Democratic strategy seems to be make them stand in fire ants, and eventually he'll run away.
We asked Joseph Centeno about presidential falsehoods, Mr. Trump's charge that the news media ignore terrorist attacks, or the millions he says voted illegally in the last election.
Do you believe that millions of votes were cast illegally?
I don't have any proof either way.
As for fake news...
Do you think that somebody from CBS is going to do fake news? Going to make up something?
I would hope that that's not the case.
Nearby, Dick Gentz and Larry Rash thought the president should take a breath.
I think some of the things he's done probably should have been done a little slower.
The executive order on immigration?
I don't think he gave it enough thought. I thought he may change after the election. Once he became president, you know, he would be more presidential. He hasn't gotten to that point yet.
They both dismissed anti-Trump protests like the big one in Washington.
What did you think about that?
Oh, I thought that was the worst. I mean, the vulgarity and the violence that they espouse, it's not American. It's not the way we should be doing things. I mean, we had an election. Okay, you move forward. He won. Let him do his job.
And that's what we heard over and over from Mr. Trump's supporters here. They said, give the president a chance.
President Trump got the attorney general he wanted.
The ayes are 52, the nays are 47.
Former Senator Jeff Sessions was confirmed by his colleagues, despite opponent Elizabeth Warren being silenced for reading a 1986 letter from Coretta Scott King, the widow of the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr., that criticized Sessions for his civil rights record. Vice President Mike Pence had to step in and make history to get Mr. Trump's nominee for Education Secretary confirmed. He broke a 50-50 tie to get Betsy DeVos the job.
Never before has a vice president been called upon to cast a tie-breaking vote for a cabinet nominee. When I cast my first vote in the United States Senate, though, I wasn't just voting for you. Having seen your devotion to improving the quality of education for some of our most vulnerable children across the nation for so many years, I was also casting a vote for America's children.
Critics say DeVos doesn't seem to know much about education. Supporters say she'll shake up the system, which is what it needs. On a party-line vote, the Senate has voted to confirm Georgia Congressman Tom Price as head of the Health and Human Services Department. He's been a leader in the effort to repeal Obamacare. Other cabinet nominees are still making their way through the system. Donald Trump, businessman, and Donald Trump, president of the United States. Conflict of interest? That and more on the CBS News Weekend Roundup. This is the CBS News Weekend Roundup. I'm Sam Litzinger. For those covering the Trump White House, a pattern seems to be emerging. Early in the morning, President Trump tweets something, often something controversial or provocative, and reporters spend at least part of the rest of the day trying to find out what it's all about. Or he says something in a one-on-one interview that doesn't immediately get followed up on, but has to be. Here's a case in point that drew a lot of attention and considerable criticism, even from some Republicans. Mr. Trump's response when Bill O'Reilly of Fox News referred to Russian President Putin, a man critics say is too well-liked by Mr. Trump.
Putin's a killer. A lot of killers. You get a lot of killers. Why, you think our country's so innocent?
Michael Morell is the former number two person at the CIA. He tells CBS this morning he's having trouble figuring out why President Trump doesn't keep his distance from President Putin.
So it suggests that he doesn't have a good understanding of what Putin has done over a very long period of time. He has killed dozens and dozens of journalists, of political opponents, both inside of Russia and outside of Russia. There is no equivalency between those extrajudicial killings of political opponents and what the United States does overseas under the authority of the President of the United States to defend the United States against serious threat. It's a very bizarre statement.
Okay, so let's assume it's a bizarre statement. Let's assume that he really probably does know about Vladimir Putin. I mean, he's an intelligent man. He's been around and campaigning for 2 years for the presidency. Why is he resistant to acknowledging it?
You know, I think he has some special affection for Putin that is a result of something that we don't fully understand. You know, there are questions out there about financial ties. There's questions about compromising material. What we saw was Putin praising Trump during the campaign and Trump in return praising Putin. So it could be as simple as that. But there is some special bond here that seems to be overriding the facts and the interests of the United States of America.
On the other hand, Nikki Haley is criticizing Putin at the U.N.
Yeah, so not only Nikki, who said that she denounced what the Russians are doing in eastern Ukraine, and the vice president said that he was deeply troubled by what the Russians are doing in eastern Ukraine. So the president's comments were bookended by very, very dissimilar comments by two of his most senior advisors.
So what are the implications of mixed messages there, then?
You know, Putin is an authoritarian. So he believes that the voice of the most powerful person is the most important. So the voice he hears most loudly is the president's.
CBS News correspondent Anna Warner says Mr. Trump is still under pressure to do more to separate his financial life from his presidential life.
This golf course in Rancho Palos Verdes is owned by Mr. Trump, and he will still be in a position to make a profit off of it as president, as he will be off that new golf course in Dubai. Local Dubai reporters will get a sneak peek of the newest Trump property, an 18-hole golf course in the United Arab Emirates. In a few weeks, the course will officially open for business and welcome golfers, making it the first major Trump project to debut since Mr. Trump became president. Days before the inauguration, Mr. Trump said he would separate himself from his businesses.
These papers are all just a piece of the many, many companies that are being put into trust to be run by my two sons. And I hope at the end of 8 years, I'll come back and I'll say, oh, you did a good job.
But despite Mr. Trump's efforts to distance himself, not all documents have yet been filed. For example, Trump owns at least four corporations with the word Dubai in their names. And to date, none of their management documents have been updated. At least one still lists him as president, according to the Delaware Secretary of State. In an effort to show progress has been made, the Trump Organization released this document indicating that Mr. Trump resigned from over 400 entities. And public records show at least two properties in New York have been transferred to the Donald J. Trump Revocable Trust. But one property remains particularly thorny. The federal government, now run by President Trump, also owns the Trump Washington, D.C. Hotel. The lease specifically says that an elected official cannot be a party to the contract. So new documents filed by the Trump Organization with Washington, D.C. government state that all beneficial ownership, previously held by Donald J. Trump personally, now is held by the Donald J. Trump Revocable Trust. The agency overseeing the contract won't tell us yet if this change is sufficient.
It's a very, very small step in the right direction to the extent that the president has given up his management responsibilities to his sons. The problem, though, is the president still controls the outcome.
Stephen Schooner teaches at the George Washington University Law School. He says the president's ownership of these properties leaves an open avenue for anyone who wants to influence him by buying six-figure golf memberships or choosing Trump hotels to host lavish events.
One of the most scary things about all of this is how easy it is for anyone, a foreign government, a lobbyist, or a special interest group, to literally funnel money into the pockets of the president and the president's family through the hotel properties.
The president had promised to create more jobs, and some companies have decided this is a good time to help him keep that promise.
In an Oval Office meeting, CEO Brian Krzanich said Intel is investing $7 billion in a new chip-making factory in Arizona, which will employ 3,000 people. President Trump called it an unbelievable company and product.
I can tell you the people of Arizona are very happy. It's a lot of jobs.
The factory's been in the works for years, but Krzanich said they decided now was the time to act.
It's really in support
of the tax and regulatory policies that we see the administration pushing forward.
Intel's already the largest private employer in Arizona. Pam Coulter, CBS News, Washington.
CBS News business reporter Jason Brooks says one of Mr. Trump's tweets about Nordstrom's decision to drop his daughter Ivanka's clothing line is causing some concern in corporate boardrooms.
Nordstrom is the latest U.S. firm to experience the impact of President Trump's tweeting. The president criticized the Seattle-based retailer for dropping his daughter Ivanka's clothing line, tweeting that she had been treated so unfairly by Nordstrom, calling it terrible. Nordstrom's stock promptly slipped over 0.5% before recovering its balance. The president's tweets since the election have impacted a range of companies, including Lockheed Martin, General Motors, and Boeing.
President Trump still doesn't have many good things to say about the media, except sometimes for Fox News. During a trip to MacDill Air Force Base, he raised eyebrows in a lot of newsrooms when he claimed, without offering any evidence immediately, that reporters were ignoring terrorist attacks.
And all across Europe, you've seen what happened in Paris and Nice. All over Europe, it's happening. It's gotten to a point where it's not even being reported. And in many cases, the very, very dishonest press doesn't want to report it. They have their reasons, and you understand that.
An explosion at a soccer match is just one of multiple terrorist attacks unfolding tonight.
The White House later provided a list of incidents it claimed were underreported. It included the Paris and Santa Barbara terrorist attacks, which were covered extensively. You're listening to the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
Check out CBS Radio News podcasts. From hard news to features, there's lots available from our app. Listen to experts like John Dickerson each Sunday on Face the Nation or Scott Pelley every weeknight on the CBS Evening News. There's the World News Roundup, America's longest running network newscast, and the Weekend Roundup, our week in review magazine show. It's all available from CBSRadioNews.com or on our app for iOS and Android.
This is the CBS News Weekend Roundup. I'm Sam Litzinger. By now, you're probably using credit and debit cards that have chips in them. Only about half the machines at the grocery store I go to seem to actually recognize them, but that's another story. This story is from CBS News correspondent Dana Jacobson, and it's about how crooks are finding ways to work around those chips and steal your money just like they did before.
One type of identity fraud when thieves pose as a customer to gain access to their accounts. It's called an account takeover. In 2016, those instances increased by nearly 40%. Just last week, another case as cyber criminals took over one New Jersey man's bank accounts in minutes.
There's nothing I could have done to stop it. It was the bank that let them in.
Mark Alfinez found out that hackers had taken over his bank account last week when he got a series of email notifications that his online ID and password had been changed. The thieves called his bank and used personal details that he believes were stolen when the Office of Personnel Management was breached in 2015.
They had all my pedigree information, Social Security card, driver's license, wife's maiden name, all that stuff, but they couldn't pass the phone password. But since they had all that other information, they still let him in.
Alfinez said hackers drained his bank accounts and his children's savings accounts in under 45 minutes. His bank, USAA, told CBS News that while they can't talk about any particular case, quote, "We have extensive security measures in place. We regret that we cannot prevent all fraud from occurring." Do you feel violated?
I do. I highly do. And it's more by the bank. And what didn't happen was the bank didn't protect my money.
Until we institute stronger authentication, stronger controls on accounts, and we get rid of passwords, we're just going to have a lot of problems there.
Al Pasquale is the head of fraud and security for Javelin, a research-based consulting firm. He says chip cards may be more secure, but that they can't protect a person's information once it's shared online. Javelin's latest report found that people who frequently shop electronically are about 2 times more likely to be victims of fraud than those who only shop in stores.
Online is now sort of the new battleground to protect consumers.
MasterCard's Matt Barr and his team are working on creating more secure technology like tokenization, which is used in mobile wallets. It generates a unique code for each transaction, keeping a person's credit card data secret.
It's on Apple Pay, it's on Samsung Pay, Android Pay, it's on MasterPass. So
right.
This technology, what it means is if someone gets a hand on that scrambled card information,
yeah.
it's useless.
Barr says biometrics like thumbprints and retina scans will eventually replace passwords and make purchases more secure.
So you're shopping online.
Right now, MasterCard is at work on identity check or selfie pay, a way to check out using your phone's camera.
And you had to blink.
Right.
Because if you don't blink, you could be a photo. So it's a security feature.
As for Mark Alfinez, he's changed his phone number, passwords, and put a freeze on his credit.
How worried are you that they're going to use that personal information again?
Extremely. I do have a feeling something else is going to come up. More worried that they also have my wife's information, that hasn't come through yet.
Now, to prevent fraud, experts recommend that consumers use those mobile or e-wallets, sign up for two-factor authentication with online accounts, monitor transactions and account alerts, and then be careful with how much you share on social media and who exactly you are sharing it with.
A lot of us pay attention to the way our cars look. Not so many of us pay attention to the way they sound. And I don't mean just the way the audio system sounds. CBS News correspondent Chris Van Cleve says a lot of thought goes into all those pings and beeps and chirps you hear coming from your car.
It's the symphony of the automobile. All those chirps and dings your car makes carefully in tune.
Do you think most people who drive a Lincoln have any sense of how much time you've spent on the noises the car makes?
You know, I don't think so.
Sean DeGennaro is a Ford Vehicle Harmony engineer.
I think it's clipping off too soon.
He mixes art with science to find just the right sound.
Should we do a medley? So something like our DNA timer goes da-da-da. Or should it be a monotone, like just a single ding?
A decade ago, cars only needed a handful of noises, like a turn signal. But as vehicles get smarter, the beeps, ticks, and tocks number in the dozens and include new warnings.
With forward collision warning, we had to add a lot of harsh frequencies in there and knocking sounds.
And the idea is, we need your attention now.
We need your attention immediately.
Everything has an aesthetic.
Alfonso Albaiza from Infiniti.
The sound of the door, this thunk, this conveys a sense that the body has a rigidity, that the car itself is well engineered.
GMC even worked with Hollywood sound engineers. And like making a movie, the ideal chime can take up to a year to produce.
A year is a long time on a ding.
It is. It is. But it's going to be there forever. We want to make sure that it's a positive experience and that you're not walking away going, oh, I could never buy a Lincoln product again because they screwed up that chime and it was so irritating.
The line between irritating and informing, now part of the sound of the open road. Chris Van Cleve, CBS News, Dearborn, Michigan.
Speaking of sounds, a new study suggests more and more of us aren't hearing them as well as we should. Our colleagues at CBS This Morning talked about new research that suggests we should turn the volume down now before our damaged ears do it for us.
A new CDC report reveals a surprising number of Americans struggle with hearing loss, and many don't even know it. It affects around 40 million adults. One in five of them are between the ages of 20 and 29. Our Dr. David Agus joins us from Los Angeles. Good morning.
Good morning, Nora.
So what's causing this, and why has the problem gotten worse?
Well, what's causing it is loud noise. And it's not just how loud the noise is, it's how long someone's exposed to it. So it's both of those factors. So a moderate noise for a long period of time can cause hearing loss. And the amazing thing about this study is that almost a quarter of people who had hearing loss didn't know they had it. So when you have hearing loss occurring in people in their 20s, it's becoming a major issue in the country that we need to talk about and deal with.
David, this is happening outside the workplace, just in ordinary kind of street noise and stuff?
Yeah, it's a great question, Anthony, because we know that some people who live in workplaces with loud noise have hearing loss. And over half of these people, the hearing loss wasn't associated with loud noise in the workplace. So it's lawnmowers, it's concerts, it's putting those ear pods in your ears at higher volumes that kids do today. All of those can cause an issue. It could be stuck in traffic with noise. You know, there are these two things that aren't that expensive, foam earplugs. And when there's a loud noise, I carry them with me and put them in my ear. When I go to a concert with my kids, I put them in because you need to think forward here.
Toss to White. He's in.
I should also mention that the New England Patriots won the Super Bowl last weekend, but I won't dwell on it because too many Atlanta Falcon fans are only now recovering and I don't want to cause them to lapse into a terrible depression again, so I won't even mention the name of New England quarterback Tom Brady. Oops, I just did. Sorry. Please follow us on Twitter. We have headlines at CBS Radio News, and I'm at Sam Litzinger on the CBS News Weekend Roundup. This is the CBS News Weekend Roundup. I'm Sam Litzinger. Maybe you've looked at your bank account lately and decided you can never retire, or maybe you just don't want to retire. But do you want to keep working at the same job when you're, say, 80? Or would you rather work at something you really love to do? Our colleagues at CBS This Morning talked with a man who's written a book that could help you decide what kind of job you might want to do in your so-called golden years.
Many Americans are reinventing their careers as they work past the traditional age of retirement. 66% of baby boomers say they either are working or plan to work past the age of 65, or they have no plans to retire at all. The reasons include not being able to afford retirement and needing the income or health benefits. Career coach John Tarnoff tackles all of this in his new book. It's called Boomer Reinvention, How to Create Your Dream Career Over the Age of 50. He joins us at the table to discuss. Hello, John.
Good morning.
You point out in the book you are not a career counselor. You say you've been fired a lot. 18 jobs you've had, fired 7 times, but yet you feel qualified to give advice about careers. Why?
Well, I'm a recovering film studio executive, entertainment is a pretty tumultuous kind of a profession. So I think that as a result of having been through all these ups and downs, I've learned a thing or two about how to pivot from a setback and turn a setback into a success. And that, coupled with a psychology degree, which I earned when I hit a wall in my career at age 50 and decided to pivot to a career that was more oriented towards education and training.
Well, because you say don't be ashamed of being fired.
Exactly.
And embrace the failure.
Exactly.
Which is hard to do when you've been fired.
Well, I think particularly today when the economy is changing so fast and roles are changing, we have to realize that it's not always about our performance. And I think boomers were raised at a time when being fired was shameful. It meant that you couldn't stay in this job that was supposed to maintain your career.
And how much of it is that generational hardwiring?
I think a lot of it is. Mm-hmm. I think we were conditioned to this idea that you got a good education, got a good job, worked for 40 years, got to retire, and that's out the window.
Mm-hmm. And that's why you say you should reinvent your career before you are forced to do so.
Well, exactly.
Which I think is a really good point.
Because a lot of people in their 50s are being downsized and, you know, being given early retirement buyouts, and they're kind of lost. They think, I've worked in this job that defines me, and they need to understand that there is more. There's more down the road, and that the job is inside them. That next career step is not out there in some job description.
No, the line that stood out, guys, to me was take a deep dive into your heart.
Yeah, it really is.
I like that.
Based on your research, what were some good examples of people who reinvented themselves, who were boomers? How did they do it? Take a step by step.
Yeah. Well, I have profiles of 7 people in the book, and I really wanted to go out to find people who were using some of the principles that I talk about in the book, and without getting into the 5 steps and 23 strategies, which is kind of this modular program that you can avail yourself of, what it comes down to me are 2 ideas. The first idea is that, again, the job is inside you, and that we all have, particularly at this stage of life, we've kind of earned this right to have meaning and purpose in our careers. We know more who we are, what we're capable of, what we like to do, how we're going to enjoy getting up in the morning and going to work for the next 20 years of our lives. And that the other idea is that in order to create the future, you have to reconcile the past. You know, we all have a certain amount of baggage at this point in our lives, and if we bring that baggage into a job interview or an investor meeting, they're going to see that we're not quite resolved
really
about this.
25% of people who live to the age of 65 will live till 90.
Yep.
So we could be working on a long time.
Dream and dream big. John Tarnoff, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
You've heard of long-haul flights. Maybe you've even been on one. CBS News correspondent Vladimir Dudier says there's a new flight that's officially become the longest haul of all.
Qatar Airways now flies the world's longest airline route. The carrier's first flight to New Zealand landed in Auckland 16 hours and 10 minutes after leaving Doha. The return flight takes even longer because of headwinds. At just over 9,000 miles, it's the greatest distance between 2 cities linked by direct flights in the world. So you might ask, what does it take to get through a flight like that? Well, for one thing, there were four pilots on board working in pairs, and flight crews say they served about 1,100 cups of coffee and tea, 1,036 meals, and over 2,000 cold drinks.
Here's something that made a really long flight. The American Meteor Society, which sounds like a pretty interesting group, says there was a wonderful sight in the sky over the Midwest. A visitor from space.
Mike Hankey with the Society says that sight was caused by a minivan-sized asteroid chunk smacking the atmosphere high above the western shore of Lake Michigan.
We had reports as far east as New York and as far as Minneapolis in the west.
The sonic boom reportedly shook houses and the impact showed up on the Doppler radar.
The cloud appeared right after the event took place and only lasted for a second. And the cloud is big. I mean, it's like over 5 miles wide.
Hankey says those green flames were likely the product of nickel and other elements burning up in the atmosphere. Anthony Polrise for CBS News, Kalamazoo, Michigan.
Now, I can't let this week go by without saying so long to a man who made me laugh a lot. CBS News correspondent Tom Foti says Irwin Corey has died. Or, as he himself might put it, he is deceased, meaning to be dead. Dead as a doornail. But what is a doornail? And what does a doornail have to do with death? On the other hand, since we're now talking about hands...
Irwin Corey made his name in stand-up comedy, playing an absent-minded professor, dressed like a slob, hair sprouting in all directions. He ran it in nonsensical doublespeak.
You can fool some of the people some of the time, but you can't fool some of the people some of the time, and some of the time, you can fool some of the people some of the time.
Corey was a frequent guest on variety and game shows from the 1950s through the 1970s. And he acted in movies such as 1969's How to Commit Marriage.
When the most humble enjoy the fruits of wealth, then the wealthy become richer in the poor of poverty.
Irwin Corey's nickname for his professor character was the world's foremost authority, while famed stand-up comedian Lenny Bruce called Irwin Corey one of the most brilliant comedians of all time.
Well, I feel not only honored... But I feel the confrontation upon which we have set our sights can no longer endure at the propensity of a developing prognosis. Now you say what?
Irwin Corey was a master of words, even if the words he put together often didn't make any sense. CBS News correspondent Vicki Barker says the latest edition of the Merriam-Webster Dictionary includes some words he might have liked, even as he made them into amusing blather.
More than 1,000 new words appear in the latest edition, some drawn from the online world, net neutrality, abandonware, and botnet. Our devices now allow us to binge-watch, photobomb, and ghost someone. Medicine now talks about supercentenarians, EpiPens, and urgent care. And there's the recently recognized condition of face blindness called prosopagnosia, all words and concepts that have entered our language in the past 20 years.
Our word to you is thanks. Thanks for your kind attention to the program.
What was the question?
You're listening to the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
Like what you're hearing? Get even more great content from CBS Radio News podcasts. Listen to TV broadcasts like The Evening News and Face the Nation on demand. Or hear original audio programming like our weekend review show, The Weekend Roundup. You can also hear the story behind the story on Reporter's Notebook or What's Hot on Tech Talk with Larry Magid. Get these podcasts and more from iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play today.
This is the CBS News Weekend Roundup. I'm Sam Litzinger. The Grammy Awards are being handed out this weekend, a very big deal for musicians and their fans. It's also a very big deal for the company that actually makes those little awards by hand. CBS News correspondent Maria Villarreal paid it a visit.
On Grammy night, a fortunate few go home with an armful of excess baggage. It's a burden they're more than happy to bear.
This is really awkward holding these.
Most have no idea the shiny piece of hardware in the palm of their hand takes shape far from the luster of Los Angeles. 800 miles away, surrounded by snow-capped mountains, lies tiny Ridgeway, Colorado, population 945.
It's quiet. We have no crime. People look out for one another.
Craftsman John Billings came here in 1993 to build light fixtures for a client. He never left.
When you came to visit Ridgeway, did you just know this is where I want to be?
Instantly.
He set up shop and brought his most famous work of art with him.
How many Grammys do you do in this workshop?
Altogether, we're making 600 Grammys in a year's time.
Growing up in Los Angeles, Billings apprenticed for Bob Graves, the grandfather of the Grammys who crafted the very first statue in 1959. On his deathbed in 1983, Graves passed on his legacy.
He asked me to promise that I would not let another company get the Grammy Awards, that I would keep them. So this is the mold for the cabinet portion of the Grammys.
Each Grammy starts with a base. 650-degree molten metal is hand-poured into a custom mold. It solidifies almost instantly into a shape recognized around the world.
This is a special mixture of metals.
Yes, it's a mixture of zinc and aluminum, and it has some trace elements in it. And I can't tell you what those are.
That's the secret.
Yes.
He even gave it its own name, Grammium. It takes 15 meticulous hours to assemble each statue, piece by piece. Finished only when the familiar gold-plated horn is screwed into place.
We don't know each Grammy who's going to get that Grammy, but we imagine in our minds it's going to our favorite person.
And one time, it actually did.
It was when Bob Dylan was handed his Lifetime Achievement Award.
Congratulations.
And then I realized that my hero, I made something for my hero. This is my bench where I do a lot of repair work. This was the one that Taylor Swift dropped when she was holding an armload of them. And it broke. And we got her to autograph it for us.
Okay. At 72 years old, John Billings has turned minor mishaps into treasured memories and a lifetime of craftsmanship into a simple nickname, the Grammy Man.
I don't know if making the Grammys defines me, but it certainly fulfills my needs.
How long will you continue to do this?
As long as I can.
After all, he has a promise to keep to the mentor who asked him to keep the Grammy in the family over 30 years ago.
Do you feel like you've lived up to that promise?
I do. I think he would be proud.
Mireya Villarreal, Ridgeway, Colorado.
CBS News correspondent Lee Cowan caught up with a man who's up for a Grammy, but who's already a winner because of all he's overcome to get this far.
His music is unique, and so's his name, Anderson .Paak. Simple enough, except he puts a dot in the middle.
That is for detail. Remind me about work ethic and pay attention to the small things. You know what I'm saying?
But you don't say it.
Nah, it's a soft dot.
Soft dot?
Yeah, yeah. Don't say it. Anderson .Paak. Don't be that guy.
I'm only coming out to play.
He's a very young-looking 30-year-old, and he's certainly blessed in the confidence department.
Yes, Lord!
From the second floor window of his old L.A. recording studio, he's happy to let the world know that Anderson .Paak has arrived.
I'm nominated.
Twice, actually, for Best New Artist and Best Urban Contemporary Album, Malibu.
It's not super hyper intellectual, but it's not dumb fast food either, you know? It's like good music for smart, sexy people to dance to and, you know, good high-end art, you know?
We met at Escala, a restaurant in Koreatown, where he lives with his wife and his young son, Seoul.
They give us a lot of free drinks here, so we like this place the most.
There was a time when he needed all the free drinks he could get. He'd been struggling at music for years with barely an ear that cared. Until one day, his wavy, soulful sound got him the attention of Dr. Dre, who asked .Paak to sing on his long-awaited album, Compton. It sent .Paak into hip-hop heaven.
He told me he liked the pain in my voice.
The pain?
Yeah. You got that pain in your voice. And you got a story in your voice. When I hear it, it sounds like you, only you. Generations of harsh
living and addiction. Turns out Pac did have a story. And it was painful. Growing up in Oxnard, California, he watched his father slide into drug and alcohol addiction and nearly beat his mother to death.
He went from being there every day to him, I only see him, you know, a few times a week. And then, you know, to the day where he was like, where I saw him literally on top of my mom, you know, really trying to take my mom's life. So it was like tough. That was like last time I seen him.
His mom married again, only to go to jail herself, along with his new stepfather, for tax evasion.
I was used to just ups and downs and seeing, you know, things go from happy times to really dark.
Music, though, was always his refuge. He taught himself the drums, and every Sunday, you could find him here, playing at his Baptist church. By high school, Pac was making his own mixtapes, and he began taking music more seriously.
So what changed?
No, I had a family to take care of, and that was huge. Once I realized, oh, it's not just you. Everything you do now affects the life of your child, the life of your wife, and they need you. So if you're going to do this music thing, you really got to do it and go 100%. My uncles had
to pay the cost. Which to him meant drawing from his past instead of hiding from.
It's going to give you that flavor, that grease.
CBS will present the Grammys live Sunday night. Hey, why didn't I get any swag? We appreciate your listening to the Weekend Roundup. Please keep in mind you can do a search online to find past episodes. Search for CBS News Weekend Roundup. The Weekend Roundup is produced at the CBS News Washington Bureau. I'm Sam Litzinger, CBS News.